When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mean Ol' Lion Media presents Pregnancy Pearls. Meet Dr. Nicole Plenty, a double board certified OBGYN and high risk pregnancy expert. She's brilliant, well-researched, and feisty. Growing tired of seeing complications of pregnancy that could have been prevented, she wanted a way to empower women through knowledge because, as she says, all doctors aren't created equal. This quest to educate women birthed this podcast, Pregnancy Pearls with Dr. Plenty.
Thanks for listening to Pregnancy Pearls Podcast with me, Dr. Nicole Plenty. So, of course, y'all, I am gloating in the season because it's the most wonderful time of the year. And yes, that means that it is Christmas time. And so if you're new here, just know that I absolutely love Christmas season because not only is it me and Jesus' birthday, yep, I'm a Christmas baby, but it's a time to plan. It's a time to hang out with family and friends that you haven't seen in a while for some of us. And it's also a time for good food and some fun. I just absolutely love Christmas. I feel like everybody's always in a much better mood just because it's the Christmas season. And if you've been listening to the podcast, you know that for me, after Halloween came, it was Christmas time. So I sort of made Christmas time throughout the Thanksgiving season. But unfortunately, I thought I was going to be set up for Christmas much earlier. But y'all, I'm just getting the trees up this week. And I wanted to have them up by November 1st. But I've been slacking and I've been sick. So I'll have them up by December 1st. Do you have your tree up yet? Let me know. Are y'all fully decorated? Are you guys getting a late start like I am? Either way, I'll be turning 40 something this year. So I'm going to stop counting the years up. I'm just going to let y'all think I'm turning 40 every year. So this is my 40th birthday again, y'all. Or maybe I'll start counting backwards like Benjamin Button, just counting the years down. Now, speaking of Benjamin Button, I was talking to some patients and I realized that some of y'all that are of childbearing age don't know what Benjamin Button is. I am just appalled. But then I realized that that movie was released in 2008, which is a really long time ago. I mean, that's 15 years ago. So patients in their 20s, I mean, y'all were like 5 when that movie was released. So some of y'all have never heard of Benjamin Button, the mysterious case of Benjamin. Have you ever heard of him? Do you know who he is? Are you one of those people? Makes me feel old when I take care of patients in their 20s because y'all don't know what a lot of things are that I reference, but I'm going to have to check myself when I drop this stuff on the podcast. So either way, all the rave right now is weight loss, right? We're talking about weight loss over the summer. Now we're going to the holiday season and people are like trying to plump up and then they're like, man, I'm gonna start losing weight right after, right? Your New Year's resolution is to lose weight. So I guess since we did plump up during the pandemic, everybody's been trying to trim down and we'll try to trim down again after the New Year's resolution. Unfortunately and accidentally, some of y'all are on these weight loss drugs to suppress appetite and all the things, and you happen to get pregnant. So the main drug that's popping for weight loss right now is Ozempic. So since I've had a lot of questions about Ozempic, and I've had some new OB consults this month with people on Ozempic that are now pregnant, I figured we need to discuss a topic or an episode dedicated just to that. So if you've been under a rock and you've never heard of Ozempic, it's a newer drug that's used to treat type 2 diabetes. Ozempic, along with diet and exercise, is proven to improve blood sugar in adults with type 2 diabetes, and it can also improve known heart disease and reduce the risk of major cardiovascular effects like stroke, heart attack, and even death as a result of those. So this is a good thing, right? You lose weight and you prevent all these bad things from happening. So why is it that pregnancy is such a big deal? Well, that's why we're going to talk about it, right? It's all the good stuff that you hear. And we don't talk about what could possibly happen on some of these drugs when you get pregnant. Now, the generic name for it is semaglutide. So it works by increasing the sensitivity of your cells to insulin. It also prevents your liver from releasing more sugar into your bloodstream when you're hungry, and also slows down movement of food through your digestive tract, which means you feel fuller longer. So as a side effect, because you're not releasing all the glucose into your bloodstream and you feel fuller longer, guess what happens? Side effect is you lose weight, right? So the company got word of this newfound benefit and started marketing for weight loss. And they market it as Wegovy, W-E-G-O-V-Y, Wegovy, okay? That's another name for semaglutide. So you got semaglutide as the generic. Wegovy is what it's marketed as for weight loss specifically. And then you got Ozempic, which is what it's marketed as for diabetes. Now, most people that are on it for weight loss are actually just on the generic semaglutide, because most of the weight loss clinic are going to carry some type of the generic or either compounded, right? So they're giving you injections of semaglutide, the generic, not Wegovy or Ozempic, because Wegovy is actually very expensive and so is Ozempic. If you try to get it for diabetes and it's not covered by your insurance, you're talking about some $900 for a month's supply. And you give these injections weekly, and they gradually build in the bloodstream. The levels gradually build in the bloodstream. So you're giving these injections weekly, and if it doesn't work after you give a certain dose for a month every week, then they increase the dose, and you take the increased dose for 3-4 more weeks, right? Until you find a dose that is effectively causing you to lose weight. So that's why we have this gradual effect of weight loss that can be very significant with these types of drugs, okay? And it's convenient because you're giving yourself an injection. You're not having to take a pill every day. So people like it. You know, after you get over the fear, the initial fear of giving yourself a shot, people like it. I give myself a shot once a week. I'm not feeling as hungry. I have more energy. I'm going to lose weight. Usually it takes you getting a dose, you know, 5 or 6, 7 doses for you to start to say, oh, now I have a significant weight loss. And then they keep you on that dose that is the most effective dose for you, because they don't want to over give you a dose, because like I said, it works for diabetes, and they don't want to make you hypoglycemic or your blood sugar levels too low. Now, let me start by saying I have no issue with this drug or losing weight before pregnancy. I think that it's a great thing to lose weight before you get pregnant, right? Losing weight before you get pregnant has some long-term benefits because it decreases the complications of obesity. So you have a lower risk of heart disease. You have lower cholesterol levels, which causes you to have lower risk of peripheral vascular disease and arterial disease, which decreases your risk of a stroke and a heart attack. It decreases your risk of eye disease. All of these things that can happen slowly with people having uncontrolled diabetes or obesity with a sustained high level of cholesterol, okay? This is what happens when we don't live a healthy lifestyle. So losing the weight is the first step. And I've seen people lose tremendous amounts of weight on semaglutide and not even consciously change their diet, right? You feel fuller longer. So you eating what you want to eat, but you don't eat as much because you feel fuller. And you don't even realize you're not eating as much until you start to lose the weight and realize, wait a minute, I got more food on my plate than I did before. I'm eating less frequently. So I do think it's a great option for people that have diabetes. Now, the downfall to this drug is that it is not well studied in pregnancy. So folks are getting pregnant because what happens? You lose weight. If you actually are obese or overweight, then this also normalizes your ovulation cycle. Okay. So estrogen is converted. So testosterone to estrogen conversion happens in fat cells. So when you have a lot of fat cells, your estrogen level is going to be high. And we think that high estrogen levels can cause you to ovulate more, but that's not necessarily true. Because our brain, there's a signal that tells our brain to stop making estrogen because we got too much peripherally. We got too much because of fat cells. So instead of you just having high levels of estrogen, your body has this negative trigger that says, wait, we got too much. Don't make any more. We got too much. And because of that, you don't then get that surge you need to trigger what's called the luteinizing hormone surge, which is the surge that triggers ovulation. So too much of anything is bad. So you got too much of estrogen that triggers your body to shut down the production of estrogen, which then stops the signal to produce the LH surge, which then prevents you from ovulating. So then you decrease the amount of estrogen because you lost weight. Then what does that tell your body? Even loss of 10 pounds tells your body, okay, kick up in high gear. We're good. We can do we can trigger the estrogen cascade and the LH surge, and we can ovulate again. So that's why losing as little as 10 pounds can help with ovulation. Okay. But people that aren't ovulating regularly, they depend on them not ovulating regularly. What happens? They lose a little weight. They feel a little bit better, get a little bit more pep in their step. Their relationship feels better. They're going out. They're going to the movies. They're going out to eat. What happens when you have a good time with your spouse? You have sex. What happens when you have sex when you ovulate? You get pregnant, right? And so you have people that are getting pregnant because their ovulation is more normalized. And then you have sex, you get pregnant, and guess what? You're on semaglutide. And due to the very long half-life of semaglutide, meaning you're taking it every week, it's lasting a week, but it actually is accumulating and it's staying in your system 2 to 4 weeks afterwards, right? So you have this. So if you are on semaglutide right before you get pregnant, the pregnancy is considered to have been exposed for several weeks after cessation or after you discontinued the therapy. There are preclinical animal studies that suggest that there's a higher risk of early pregnancy loss, reduced weight of the baby, and reduced weight of the mom. And some studies have shown an association with birth defects, but these studies are limited and they're not consistent. And the reason that we talk about animal studies is because this is still a new drug and there's not a lot of data in the pregnancies. There's not a lot of data in pregnancies. So all we can do is extrapolate data from animal studies until we have enough years under our belt of us using this medicine so that we know how it actually affects humans that are pregnant.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So because you guys had so many questions about semaglutide, I figured, hey, let's go dedicate a whole episode to this and let's go to those cases and questions that you've asked. Medical intern, what's our first case?
Our first case is a woman who is 27 weeks pregnant with her first child. She has type 2 diabetes with an A1C of 6.1%. However, she didn't find out that she was pregnant until she was 21 weeks. She was sent to you for consultation after having a normal anatomy scan to discuss the risk of semaglutide exposure to her baby.
So I'm glad that we've got the normal anatomy scan. And honestly, out of semaglutide, and I've seen a lot of people on semaglutide, y'all. You know, I'm in Atlanta now. This is the land of milk and honey and everybody wants to snatch waist, right? So a lot of people are on different weight loss medicines, but I have not seen somebody that has no other risk factors that's on semaglutide and had a birth defect. Now, obviously, this is still a new drug And as many patients as I've seen on semaglutide, that number is still not an astronomical amount for me to comfortably say there's no risk. But I'm glad that we've already gotten the anatomy scan out of the way for this patient. And we know that this patient doesn't have birth defects, because otherwise I would have counseled the patient on that there being an increased risk of growth of birth defects. But the biggest thing about semaglutide is that, hey, it causes you to lose weight and it stays in your system for quite a while. So people that, if you have a decreased appetite in pregnancy, you're not eating as much, you're not gaining weight. And so that can nutritionally compromise the baby. And so even if you stopped it, you could still have the lingering effects of that decreased appetite, which can then compromise the baby. We also want to make sure your blood sugar doesn't run too low in pregnancy. Okay. I don't want you dizzy. I also need you to be able to take in a certain amount of glucose so that we know that we do have enough crossing the placenta for the baby. But the biggest thing is your weight gain and this baby's weight. So for patients that are on semaglutide, that were on it, or that's on really anything that can suppress the appetite, I counsel them as if they were somebody that had bariatric surgery. I say, hey, listen, we want to make sure that we're gaining a proper amount of weight in pregnancy. This patient didn't tell us what her weight was. So anybody that is normal weight should be gaining 25, 35 pounds in pregnancy. If you are overweight, okay, you have obesity, your BMI is over 30, you should be gaining about 11 to 20 pounds the whole pregnancy. So keep that in mind and pace yourself. Patients should be eating 3 meals and 3 snacks a day. So I want you to be conscious and consistent about eating breakfast, a snack, lunch, a snack, dinner, and a bedtime snack. It's a patient with diabetes, so she should be eating like that anyway, right? Making sure you eat pretty much about every 3 hours. I also tell my patients, if you eat at 12 noon and then you don't eat dinner again until 7 or 8, you really should be having 2 snacks between that 12 noon and that 7 or 8. Like I said, you should be putting something in your mouth about every 3 hours. And so that is a way to make sure we keep your blood sugar up. That's also a way that nutritionally we make sure you have an adequate intake. And you don't have to overeat. It's just being consistent in the amount of eating that you're doing so that we know that you're getting enough calories in to sustain the pregnancy. So for somebody like this, I want them to make sure they're eating consistently. 2, make sure their diabetes stays controlled. A1C is 6.1%. That's great. 6% is goal at the beginning of pregnancy. We also want to make sure the finger sticks stay controlled, especially if you're going to be transitioning off of semaglutide. I would also want to put you on something a little bit more pregnancy safe, like metformin. Metformin is a pill that increases your body's sensitivity to insulin. And it also has a side effect of weight loss. And some weight loss clinics start people on metformin for it. But the weight loss is not as profound as something like semaglutide. Plus, metformin is an old drug. It's old school. Very well studied. We know that it crosses the placenta in very small, tiny concentrations. It usually does not lead to an increased risk of birth defects. But if you have uncontrolled diabetes, I would not recommend that you stay on it through the pregnancy. I would switch you to insulin. Uncontrolled diabetes with people on metformin, blood sugar readily crosses the placenta. So the baby has access to it through what's called GLUT receptors on the placenta, like little doors that glucose just sort of knock, walk through, right? If the cord is clamped and you have a high glucose level, the baby stops making insulin, right? If it doesn't have access to glucose, right? Because the reason you make insulin is to sense the glucose so your cells can uptake it. But if it no longer has access to blood sugar, because now the cord is clamped, its source is cut off, the baby just stops making insulin. The time it takes for insulin to stop being produced by a baby, about 2 minutes. So we don't run that risk of low blood sugar. But metformin that's crossed the placenta, it's lasting for 5 to 8 hours. So babies that are born to moms that have uncontrolled diabetes because they have a high blood sugar and then that cord is clamped, those babies can all of a sudden drop. Why? Because they've made a whole bunch of insulin. And even though they shut down production, metformin is still lingering around, making the blood sugar of the baby drop even further. So people that are not controlled on metformin, the recommendation is to switch to insulin, which does not cross the placenta. Glucose crosses the placenta, and the baby makes its own insulin as a result of the glucose that crosses. And because insulin doesn't cross the placenta, the insulin that you give yourself, that is the safest thing for the baby in pregnancy. So I would switch the patient to one of two of those drugs, either metformin or insulin, to make sure their hemoglobin A1C and blood sugar levels stay very well controlled. I do have an episode, at least one, on diabetes in pregnancy. Go back and listen to that. Y'all know it was good. Go back and listen to that if you want to learn more about how diabetes is treated. But semaglutide is not the one we would need to use. The other thing I want to do for this patient is monitor her weight and the weight of the baby. So anybody that's on semaglutide, you're getting growth scans on the baby pretty much every month to make sure the baby's weight doesn't drop down too low. Why is that a big deal? Well, babies that don't have adequate weight gain that fall to less than the 10th percentile have an increased risk of poor outcomes. So when we talk about percentiles, every baby's weight is put on a graph based on its percentile for the gestation of the pregnancy. So 50th percentile is dab smack in the middle, is average, with anything between the 10th percentile and the 90th percentile being the normal range. Okay, so if you're in school, you remember the bell-shaped curve. You got some curve that's skewed to the left and skewed to the right. So you got the little tail on the left, little tail on the right. Anything that's under 10 is small. Anything that's over 90 is big. People that have babies under the 10th percentile, those babies have an increased risk of stillbirth. So we got to monitor small babies very close to decide when to deliver them. Babies that are under the 10th percentile should be getting testing, meaning ultrasound to look at breathing, movement, tone, fluid around the baby, and blood flow through the umbilical cord every week to make sure that it's normal, okay? And if you are on semaglutide and your baby is a normally grown baby, then the goal is to monitor the size of the baby to know when we got to start doing the weekly testing to make sure that the size stays normal. And if it drops to below the 10th percentile, then you're going to be seen weekly or more frequently, depending on what's going on with the baby. And then obviously we want to make sure that your weight gain is adequate and that we don't need to tell you to supplement with anything to keep your weight gain adequate and while keeping your blood sugars under control. I know we said a mouthful with that case because this is a typical consult and there's a lot of pieces that go into this. But the case pro for this case is semaglutide use, even if it's discontinued, can lead to continued weight loss during pregnancy. Close evaluation of the growth of the baby is recommended throughout the pregnancy. All right, medical intern, what's our next case?
This one is an email question. It says, Dr. Plenty, which kind of birth defects are caused by semaglutide?
So the short answer is we don't know, right? Because we don't have many human studies at all. Based on animal studies, it looks like heart defects are what we see. I don't see any studies that I pulled that have caused any facial defects or any other type of abnormalities, but a heart defect, remember, is the most common defect that any baby is born with. And this could be due to nutritional deficits very early in the pregnancy, but it looks like cardiac defects are going to be most common. And then you also have issues with spinal cord defects that we've seen in very limited animal studies. But again, there's not really much data at all in pregnancy of humans. And the background risk for anybody to have a baby with a birth defect is about 3 to 5%. So some of these studies need further studies to see if this is consistent with just a background risk or if there's really something that can happen with semaglutide use. But right now we just have to go with the limited studies we have, which say heart and spine are the most common. But again, these studies are not consistent even in animals. All right, medical intern, do we have any more email questions or cases?
Yes, this one says, how soon after delivery can I restart Ozempic for weight loss?
That's a tricky one. I always tell people, if it's not safe in pregnancy, I really don't want you to do it postpartum. Mind you, we have to weigh the risk and the benefit of you starting it. If you're not breastfeeding, then you can start semaglutide whenever you want to, okay? But if you are breastfeeding, we have to know that it's unknown whether it passes in the breast milk because we don't have any studies. Okay. So if you are planning to breastfeed, that's something that's risk versus benefit that we have to do. I would tend to say, based on the studies, that it probably is generally overall safe. And we do want your blood sugars to remain controlled. But if we can control you with something like metformin instead while you're breastfeeding that year, that is what I recommend, just because we don't have a lot of studies on Wegovy or semaglutide or Ozempic in the postpartum setting. So I would say, until we get more data, I would say let's do metformin or insulin and hold back on that. But if, let's say, this is the only thing that can control you, like you've tried these other medicines, then I would say, yes, you have to weigh the risk and the benefits, and you could do it. But again, that may be some things that we may have to say. If the baby's getting hypoglycemic or having low blood sugar, then we have to say maybe you shouldn't breastfeed if this is the only alternative that you have. All right, medical intern, do we have any more cases? And she is shaking her head no. So thank you guys so much for listening to the Pregnancy Pearls podcast. I hope that you learn more about Ozempic, aka semaglutide, aka Wegovy, and how it can affect your pregnancy. If you like the topic, make sure to rate, comment, and share me with your friends. If you or someone you know has had a pregnancy complication or a unique pregnancy situation, let me know about it. Email me at pregnancypearls@gmail.com to hear your topic or case discussed on one of our podcast episodes. Also, remember to follow me on Instagram at pregnancy_pearls and Facebook at pregnancypearls. You can also make sure to check out the website, which is www.drnicoleplenty.com, for more free pregnancy downloadables. And this month, I'll be doing a couple of lectures. The first one is on idiopathic intracranial hypertension in pregnancy. And that lecture will take place this Friday, so the day after the podcast drops, on December 1st at 10 a.m. So if you want to learn more about that, make sure to check out my social media pages. In closing, remember to advocate for yourself. You are your biggest advocate, and no one knows what's going on with your body except for you. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Pregnancy Pearls is hosted by Dr. Nicole Lee Plenty. Produced by Nicole Plenty and Janine Brunson Johnson. Executive producer Ken Johnson. Find Pregnancy Pearls on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe and rate. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice for diagnosis or treatment of individual medical conditions. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with specific questions regarding a medical condition. Pregnancy Pearls is a Mean Old Lion Media production.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.